listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome to Aquarium Mania on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Roy Anong, speaking to you from the University of Florida's Tropical Aquaculture Laboratory in Ruskin. Thanks for joining us. How did wild aquarium fish from South America, Africa, and Asia first get into the aquarium hobby all those many years ago? Before there were ornamental fish farms, including those here in Florida, there were fish biologists and collectors visiting exotic places and bringing back beautiful specimens of fish they found. Many of these fish are now raised on fish farms, but new species continue to enter the hobby every year. And now, ecotourists can join fish collecting trips in some of the most diverse waters of the world. My guest today is Jaap Jan de Greef, an aquarium fish expert who has lived all over the world. Jaap is well known in the aquarium hobby not only for his wealth of knowledge, but also for planning and leading amazing fish collecting trips for fish research and aquarium hobbyists. He has collected fish on many continents, but most of his trips have been to Central and South America, including the Amazon. Jaap is a favorite speaker for hobbyist organizations and has fascinating fish stories to share. We'll be right back with our intrepid explorer, Jaap Jan de Greef, after these messages.
We'll be right back, right after these messages. Stay tuned.
Pawfume Dog Grooming and Finishing Spray is proud to be a new sponsor of Pet Life Radio. Pawfume Super Long Lasting Sprays are available in four unique fragrances. Each Pawfume spray is fortified with the finest conditioners and detanglers to make combing out your dog more fun. Pawfume retails for only $2 per 6-ounce bottle. Pawfume is available nationwide at all Dollar General and Family Dollar stores. Why pay more to have your dog smell great? Pawfume, Pawfume.
It's time for school for you and your friends, your furry best friends. Train your dog the fun and easy way with Teacher's Pet Sessions. Teacher's Pet host Pia Silvani teaches you step by step how to train your dog the fun and easy way. You get 8 30-minute live audio training sessions, complete transcripts of each session, plus a basic training manual to get you and your dog off to a great start. Training begins the moment you bring your dog home. Teacher's Pet Sessions offers positive reinforcement training to shape your dog's behavior and encourages upbeat, enthusiastic responses to ensure that your dog will enjoy learning. Teacher's Pet Sessions dog training is fun at both ends of the leash. So listen, learn, and laugh with your dog with Teacher's Pet Sessions. Get your copy of Teacher's Pet Sessions Volume 1 today. To order, go to teacherspetsessions.com.
Hi, this is Pia Silvani, your host. Bring your dog, tug toy, and treats, and get ready to have some fun.
teacherspetsessions.com.
Coast to coast and around the world, it's O-Behave with Arden Moore. Find out why cats and dogs do the things they do and get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get great tail-wagging pet tips and have a fur-flying fun time. O-Behave with America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore. Every week on demand, this is the place for a special paparazzi treat. Only on PetLifeRadio.com. Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Aquarium Mania on Pet Life Radio. My guest today is Jaap Jan de Greef, a well-known aquarium fish expert and collector. Hi, Jaap. Thanks for being with us today.
Hey, Roy. Hello. How are you?
Good. So, We've got a couple questions here for you, and hopefully you're weathering the storms we're having over here in Florida. You've had some pretty amazing experiences which have taken you all over the world. Can you start by telling us how a Dutch citizen like yourself ends up in Southeast Asia and then Africa before you were even 14 years old? And how did fish fit into all of this?
At the time, of course, the Netherlands Indies, which is today Indonesia, is where my mother's family spent their lives for several generations. And my father studied tropical agriculture, and both my parents were in Indonesia in the 50s, where my father worked on different plantations in tropical crops. And what happened is in 1958, there was a dispute between the Netherlands and Indonesia, and all Dutch citizens were removed from Indonesia, and there was about 150,000 people. My parents were among that. But my dad, a lot of these people, when they repatriated to Europe, they had to change their careers. But my dad stuck with his tropical agricultural degree, and he had landed a job working in East Africa, in Mozambique, which at that time was a Portuguese colony on a sugar plantation. And that's kind of how a Dutch guy ends up in Asia, Southeast Asia and East Africa. I spent the next 11 years in Africa until I had to go to Europe for my schooling. But while I was in Africa, my dad always had aquariums, and he would go into the fields and into the ditches and catch fish. And when I was about 3 years old, he took me on my first experience. This is as far as I can remember, of course. And this was in Mozambique, and we went on one of the little railway trolleys, rail trolleys that they transported sugarcane with on the plantation. We went way out into the fields to a ditch, and I caught my very first colorful fish, which happens to be Nothobranchius. And as the years went by, we moved to Tanganyika, which then later on became Tanzania, and my dad gave me a small tank, and that kind of was way too small very fast, because I started catching fish everywhere and using anything I could catch fish with, like baskets and buckets, or my bare hands, and I would catch fish and crabs and frogs and tadpoles. Anything that swam in the water went into those tanks in the early years.
I don't think I can imagine you ever being 3 years old, but I guess you must have been at some point, huh?
I was, yeah, I guess. Well, it's also the dawn of what you remember. So, you know, I have some vague memories of the place, and my dad's always amazed what I do remember from the place. But I guess when you're little, certain things make big impressions.
So so you spent a lot of time in Africa, obviously. Then what did you end up doing next after Africa?
After Africa, okay, what happened is on these plantations in Tanzania later, we actually were schooled in Dutch. There was like a small group of Dutch people that worked for the Tanzanian government, and we had a Dutch teacher. But what happened after the first six years of basic schooling were over, then of course there was no continued Dutch schooling available in a place like Tanzania or Kenya, and the choice was to go to a boarding school in Nairobi, where you would be taught in English, of course, or go back to the Netherlands. And that's what happened with me. I was sent to live with some foster parents in the Netherlands for a couple of years to continue my schooling. So that's what happened, and I have two younger brothers, and after 2 years, they became of the same age where they would have had to go to the Netherlands. My dad didn't like to have all his kids in Europe and them living in Africa, so he got a job in Suriname, and so we ended up all moving to Suriname, which was at that time a part of the Netherlands kingdom and in a country in South America. So we would all continue to our education in Dutch, and the whole family could be together.
So did you have any chance to do any collecting in when you were in Suriname at all?
Well, see, that's kind of when things went haywire, of course, because that was one of the big things I liked about Suriname. I soon after moving there, I became friends with an animal slash fish collector, and he would export fish and animals, wild animals, to zoos in Europe and so. And I was about 14 years at the time, and I worked for him as a fisherman. I would go in the rivers and pulling the seines and catch all sorts of fish. And instead of money, he paid me in fish that I had caught that day, which he knew I only had four aquariums. My dad wouldn't let me have more tanks. So the damage for him couldn't be that much as far as in pay for fish. But I got to see a lot of wild rivers and a lot of fish that we call common in the hobby, like glow light tetras and hatchet fish and pencil fish were fish that I seined by the thousands when I was 14 years old.
Wow. So you were in Suriname, and then what happened after Suriname?
Well, what happened was there was political problems in Suriname, and there was a big strike, and we weren't schooled for almost half a year. And my dad, of course, didn't want his kids to become illiterate or stay illiterate. So we were sent back to the Netherlands for about 1 year, and he looked for a job somewhere else, which ended up to be in Ecuador. And when we all moved to Ecuador, we changed languages. So I was about 16 years at the time, almost 17, I would think, that when we went to Ecuador, and I attended an American high school in Guayaquil, Ecuador. And I finished my high school degree there. And the same thing, you know, I had a choice. When I was in the Netherlands, my dad said, well, you can finish your high school here in the Netherlands, and or you can come with us to Ecuador, but you're going to have to change languages. And the chances at the time in the Netherlands to study biology were 1 in 5. If you they had a certain amount, what they call it, numerous clauses, which basically means they allowed only so many students nationwide to study biology, and your chances were 1 in 5 to get one of those posts. And, of course, looking at maps in South America and rivers, my mind was already made up. So I went to go to Ecuador because I was going to catch fish in South America. It just was more appealing to me.
It sounds like a lot of these political unrests are around the time that you moved. You had nothing to do with them, of course, I hope.
I don't know for sure, because the reason why we left Ecuador was actually we were evacuated from the plantation 3 times while we lived there, because there was unrest between the labor and the management. And my dad being staff, we were constantly moved to an apartment in Guayaquil while they sorted their problems out. And 3 weeks after we left Ecuador in 1976, the army moved in, and over 200 people were killed in a ditch right in front of some of the staff houses. It was really a tragedy.
Yeah, definitely.
That happened in 1976, so maybe we do have something. In other words, if my dad works at a certain plantation, it's better to stay away from that plantation.
That sounds right. So now, I think I remember you telling us that you, in some of our conversations, had done a couple trips for Ecuador in terms of collection.
Yeah. What happened was when I was in Guayaquil, one of my science teachers was connected or was friends with people at the National Fisheries Institute in Guayaquil. And so I started going there in the afternoons, and they taught me how to preserve fish with formaldehyde and how to collect fish, take data and things. But what it is Guayaquil is on the Pacific coast. And then you've got the Andean Mountains, and on the east side is the Amazonian part, which nobody never went to in those days. So I went when I was 16. I went there by bus. I took buses to jungle towns in the eastern side of the of Ecuador, and I collected fish for the National Fisheries Institute, preserved them, and brought them back to them. Because they had absolutely no fish from the other side of the mountain range.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. So, were you ever in any fear for your life or anything? Were
the first trip, the first trip was kind of weird because I had not brought with me my passport because I wasn't really crossing any borders. And when you come down the mountains on the east side, there's some small jungle towns that you stayed in. And I took a dugout boat floating down the Napo River to another town called Francisco de Orellana, nicknamed Coca is the name of the town. But it's a 6-hour trip down the river, and it's in the middle of, at the time they were very sensitive. So as we were getting off the boat, they didn't like the fact that I only had a high school picture ID with me, and I was deported out of the area on top of a bunch of cement bags in a military vehicle to another town. So I couldn't finish my collecting trip the first year. So I had to cut that trip short, bring back the fish to the institute, and the next year I went again. But this time I brought my passport, and I actually went further down the Napo River, closer towards the border with Peru. And along with me were two teachers from the American high school in Guayaquil. And we went to a Indian village there, and we bought Indian artifacts, the real ones, not made for tourists at that time. And we got we traded for those. And we brought those back along with us on the way back and put those in the museum at the school. And while doing that, I also collected a bunch of fish, more fish for the National Fisheries Institute.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And it sounds like you kind of had a experience in collection all throughout your life. How did you end up in Florida? And then how did you end up getting involved with taking people out as well as maybe even more collection for researchers?
Well, what happened, of course, is after graduating from high school, I couldn't go back to the Netherlands for college. And so we applied to a number of universities in the United States, and Florida State University was one of the first to have its paperwork done, so I ended up going to Florida State. But I had to wait a half a year, so on the way there, I moved to Curaçao, and I lived on Curaçao in a marine biological station, and basically I got a room and in return for working there, and I did volunteer work of just helping other biologists and scientists with their studies. So I ended up diving and collecting sponges and collecting all kinds of other urchins and other biological specimens in the water. And I also ended up working for World Wildlife Fund, studying flamingos. And so we would go to Bonaire Island, and we would go to Venezuela, and we'd do counts on the birds, and we'd take samples of their droppings and see what it is that what they were eating and all these kind of things. And I was there for about half a year, and then I continued on to Florida State, where I started studying biology.
And then how did you end up, I guess, where you are now?
Being at the Marine Biological Institute in Curaçao, you had visions of this Jacques Cousteau-like life, which is what I wanted. I wanted to be out in the river. But I also noticed that the people that I collected the samples with, we would spend one afternoon or 2 days collecting specimens, and then they'd disappear 3-4 months into a laboratory studying the samples that we'd taken. And I said, well, that's not exactly what I had in mind. So, and I also noticed that most biologists don't make a lot of money career-wise. So I realized, I said, well, I wanted to live in all places as I grew up in so many of them. So I kind of started off with the idea of copying my dad's career. I said, well, I'm going to go to South America and seek my fortune there, but not in biology. So I started focusing on agriculture. And not knowing anything about agriculture, I interviewed for a job here in America, and I was hired because I spoke both Spanish and English as a foreman on a big tomato farm here in Florida.
Okay.
And so that's how I ended up in Florida.
That sounds great. You know, I want to talk to you a little bit more about some of the trips you've gone on and some of the stories you have, but we'll have to continue our discussion with you after these messages from our sponsors.
We'll be right back, right after these messages. Stay tuned.
Give your dog some thought with Dog Thoughts. It's the iPhone application that everyone's talking about.
Hey, what do you think of this? A man in Davis, California says he's invented an application for the iPhone that claims it can read your dog's mind. Huh? No, it's true. I read about it on my cat's Twitter page. That's why.
Jay Leno talked about it, CBS reported on it, and now you can see what all the buzz is about. Created just for dog lovers, Dog Thoughts makes taking photos of your furry best friend more fun. Shake your dog and read his mind. On your iPhone, of course. Take a pic of your pup, shake your phone, and watch as his thoughts appear on the screen. Does he have a bone to pick with you, or is he having a tail-wagging day? Get your Dog Thoughts iPhone app today. Just 99 cents. Go to PetLifeRadioPromotions.com. That's PetLifeRadioPromotions.com.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in Paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No, to my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Having a rough day? Longing for the dog days of summer? Think your fun furry friend lives a dog's life? Well, find out everything you're begging to know as Pet Life Radio presents It's a Doggy Dog World with pet expert and award-winning author Liz Palaika. Every dog has his day, and you'll find out how to make your dog's day fun and rewarding every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
We're back. And continuing our discussion with my guest, Jaap Jan de Greef, aquarium fish expert and collector. So, Jaap, you obviously have been all over the world and have some pretty amazing experiences. I was just curious, how many languages do you speak?
Well, some people say I speak eight, but I would say I speak three very decently, and then the other five I kind of dabble along when I need to.
I'm assuming that must help you when you're taking people on your trips as well.
Yes. Tangling with languages, so it's not something that I'm afraid of. I'm not afraid to make a mistake or say something wrong, because usually it means people laugh at you, doesn't matter to me. You have to have a little bit sense of humor to work your way through a new language. Now, what happens with to get back at the tomatoes, I ended up on the tomato farm I ended up running the packing house. I worked for a family business.
Okay.
So part of the year, I run the packing house, and my brothers-in-law, they do the actual growing. And this gives me about a 3-month window between seasons twice a year. And my interest in the fish still is there. So since I live on the farm, I have ample space to keep fish. And that allows me to make trips to start collecting fish for myself. And pretty soon I was collecting fish for universities and fish farmers in the area that I live in. So I was often looking for specific fish for those farms to get them fish that they could use in their business.
How did you get involved with the eco-tours and aquarists, you know, the hobbyists?
Okay, this is, you know, 20-some years later, and I've been, you know, of course, haven't had experience collecting fish all over the place. My son was also at Florida State University in his last year, and I decided, well, we need to do one more collecting trip together. Now, I've taken him on other trips before, but it was kind of like a last-minute decision, and there is a Margarita Tours is a fish collecting organization, I guess. They make trips in out of Iquitos, Peru, where they take aquarists for a week, either upstream or downstream, to collect fishes that they have seen in pictures and had in their aquariums. And these guys gives them a chance to catch their own fish. So I decided, well, I'm going to just go as a tourist. So I bought two tickets, one for my son and myself, and we tagged along with one of those groups. And while I was there, it turned out that one of the tour guides actually was hanging up his cleats, and they were looking for somebody to lead tour groups. And both the operator of the tour of the company and I got along very well. So they offered me the position, and so ever since then I've been taking groups to Peru for the last 6-7 years.
What kind of preparation do you have to do when you're leading a trip, and what sort of regulations do some of these countries have?
Do you want to focus just on the Peru thing or in general?
I guess either. Do you want to talk about Peru first?
Yeah, the Peru is probably more organized, of course, because what happens there is things are already done for most people. So the only thing is, I guess you have to do is pull out your wallet and pay. but well, it's kind of what it boils down to in the end. All the paperwork and the legalities are taken care of by that Margarita Tours company itself.
Okay.
And my job is basically to come along. We catch fish, help them with the identification of the fish. I also take the people after we come back to Iquitos. I actually take all the people to wholesalers, because it's logical that we are not catching each and every fish that is of interest to these people. So we go to wholesalers and see what's available at a specific time in Iquitos. And you can buy them cheap, of course. Then we take them to this fish exporter. We identify the fish and turn in a list and get a permit. All the fish get packed and shipped by this exporter to Miami, goes through a broker who then picks it up at customs, clears the paperwork, and sends the boxes of fish to the different people that have their boxes handled this way. So basically all that trouble is being done for you.
Okay. So where are the people staying, or how does the...
While we're in Peru? Okay, uh-huh. Usually what happens is they arrive on the weekend, 1 or 2 days before departure, and in Iquitos, and they are put up in a hotel, and it's actually a 3-star hotel, of course, 3 Peruvian stars. but you know, it's an air-conditioned hotel, and it's there's a few things to see in Iquitos itself of interest. I wouldn't recommend staying there for 3 weeks, because you're out in a jungle town, But you know, one day is easy to fill, to get acquainted with the place. And usually what we do is we board the ship at in Sunday morning, and we go out of port. And as I said earlier, we go either 1 week upstream or 1 week downstream. And that means basically 5 days, though. And you've got cabins and bunk beds to sleep in on the boat. All your meals are prepared, so you don't have to worry about, I guess you would say, Atahualpa's revenge. Montezuma would be in Mexico. But, of course, that's not always avoidable. The last trip we had on, pretty much everybody got a good case of the stomach cramps, including myself.
Okay.
And so every now and then you have to put up with a few days of spending some considerable amount of time on a toilet. But in between that, we catch all the fish. We seine sand banks where you get bigger fish, you know, sometimes stingrays, other large catfish. And we also go upstream into Blackwater Creeks, and this is where you would catch your neon tetras and your epistogrammas and your corydoras type fish.
So what are you using then to collect these fish? Obviously, the river's a pretty big river.
What do I usually want?
What do you use for to collect the fish? You mentioned primarily seines.
For the river holes, of course, we use a giant seine. But when we go up these blackwater streams, everybody's pretty much with a dip net, and everybody has a blast dipping up tons and tons of fish. And we always catch much more fish than we can really carry back with us.
If you had to choose, what would you consider your favorite place to collect fish?
For myself?
Sure. For both, for yourself and for the aquarist or the aquarium hobby.
I think this Iquitos thing for a lot of hobbyists is a very nice thing, because basically it's very relaxed and you don't really have to worry about getting shot at or getting into any legal trouble or anything. So and you get to see the exciting fish, you know, people that have all these thoughts about piranhas and stingrays and things. You get to actually see them. You actually get to catch some of those with your own self. This last trip we were on, we had three guys in the same day. On the very first day that we had them going off the boat, all three of them got buzzed by an electric eel, by the same eel. How they managed to nail the same eel in the same spot, I don't know, but they did.
That's amazing.
I mean, it's funny because I've never been zung by an electric eel, and here was three of them who got nailed within a half an hour's time, and it was kind of neat because it's something that, I mean, you're not going to get hurt from it, but it's an interesting story to tell afterwards.
No one got bitten up by any piranhas, I assume.
We catch piranhas all the time. Most of the time they're very small and they're they're probably a disappointment to most people because they're really not as exciting as you as the stories are.
Now, I know there's also not that it's an aquarium fish, but there's also that little tiny catfish, the candiru, right?
Yeah, candiru. Yeah, we do catch those. We catch those. As a matter of fact, this last trip, I nailed about 20 of them in one dip at some point among a bunch of leaf litter.
Wow. And, yeah, those I'd be afraid of, and we probably won't want to talk too much more about those. But
just make sure you wear tight underwear.
Yes, exactly. So what's you must have you mentioned the electric eel. Do you have some other really kind of good stories regarding a collection during some of these trips?
Well, here's one thing. You know, when you're watching Discovery Channel, so you'll see programs on Arapaima gigas, which is like one of the largest, longest fish, freshwater fish in the world.
Right.
We actually get to eat that on the boat because it's a consumption fish in Peru. And what they do is they collect the fry and raise them in ponds legally, and it's sold as meat. And so one of the you'll get at least two meals that has arapaima in it as the meat. So,
wow! And I think for folks that aren't familiar with those are the really large kind of arowana type fish, right?
They can get to, yeah, it's an arowana type, and it can get like 10 feet long.
Now, what does it taste like? What does arapaima taste like?
It's a very mild fish to eat, actually. So it's not like you're going to have something very, very exotic. As a matter of fact, I've never seen somebody say that they really didn't like it because it is quite neutral in flavor.
So in, I guess in terms of, you mentioned a number of different fish, including neon tetras that people collect during Iquitos trips. What fish do people usually want to bring back with them?
Generally, you have two kind of crowds often. You have the kind of guys that want everything with big teeth and spines and aggression, the kind of fish that swallow whole fish and or fish half their length and all those kind of things. And like I said, fangs sticking out of every side. You have those kind of guys. Or you have the guys that like the little bitty fish, and they tend to be going more for little epistogrammas and corydoras and tetras.
So kind of a mix.
Yeah, well, you know, the one thing that we do on these trips is we catch all kinds. So everybody should be able to find something that they like. Angelfish are a very popular item. And fortunately, we do catch those almost, well, we catch them every trip. And there's some beautiful angels coming out of that portion of the Amazon River.
Wow.
So there are people, and Oscars. People are crazy about Oscars, which is something I don't understand personally, because first of all, I want the Oscar to be large enough so I can fry it in a skillet. That's the kind of Oscar I like. But why go through the trouble of bringing the thing back to the U.S. when every pet store has Oscars?
Right,
but
that's true.
Of course, it's the same thing, of course. You have the feeling that you caught the thing yourself, and that's a very, very satisfactory feeling.
That's true.
As a matter of fact, myself, you're talking about having gone all over the world, but last year I actually brought back with me 22 little neon tetras. I have set up a special aquarium in my living room with those neon tetras, and I mean, it's a 10-cent fish in the wholesale, but here, these are ones, I actually carried them in a bag out of a river all the way back to the United States.
Yeah, that's quite a challenge, definitely. So, and they're all doing pretty well right now?
Yes. Yeah, no, it's a very nice thing. And that's the appeal of the whole trip, of course. Catch your own fish, you know, the kind of fish that you wander into a pet store and say, oh, wow, this is beautiful, this is fish. You know, here you get to catch them yourself and actually bring them back yourself. You know, that's a very nice feeling.
So in terms of, I guess, you know, there may be some folks that are wondering about the impact of collecting these fish. Is there any environmental impact at all, or
what we're doing is so incredibly minimal. You know, if you think about it, five guys or eight guys with a dip net in this giant river that is a mile wide, and they're working for an hour with their little dip nets, it's completely negligible.
Okay.
What we're doing. Yeah, I mean, one farmer dumping a can of gasoline in a creek will do a lot more harm to his river than what we're doing.
No, that's true.
It's nothing to worry about.
So how did you get, I know you're pretty active with a lot of the aquarium societies, how did you get involved with the aquarium societies?
Okay, well, what happens is, doing the collecting, I decided to start taking fish pictures. And I, by no means, I'm not a very good fish photographer. And I burned many, many, many rolls of fish on fish, rolls of film on taking pictures of fish. But so I would do slideshows. So it's kind of a fun thing. Going to these foreign countries and collecting the fish gives me material to do a documentary, a slideshow, and then aquarium societies around the United States would ask me to give them a talk, and I would go to Niagara Falls, and I actually get to see the Niagara Falls because it so happens that I have a talk about fish in Uruguay. And I'm talking about fish in Uruguay in the evening, and during the daytime we go visit the falls. Or go to Sacramento, California, and we get to go see Yosemite National Park and what is it, the aquarium there in San Francisco. And you go to Chicago, you get to see Shedd's Aquarium. And so you get to see the United States by going to other countries.
That's true. That's a good way of putting it. Well, you know, I've got so many more questions for you, but unfortunately we're out of time. I want to definitely thank you very much, and I wanted to know, do you have any final words of wisdom that would be good for our current and future hobbyists and collectors?
For the aquariums?
Yeah.
Well, when your fish tank gets too full, buy a new aquarium.
That's a good one. Very good.
Yeah, I have 85 aquariums, and it's not enough.
We'll have to figure out how to get you some more aquariums.
You know, the thing about that, of course, is like they say, it's therapeutic, right? You look at an aquarium and it lowers your heart rate and it mellows you out. In my case, with 85 aquariums, when I look at an aquarium, I think, oh, shoot, I need to change the water in this one. Oh, I got to do this, I got to do that. So it just adds more work. But if you like that work, then it's fun.
Exactly. It keeps you young. Well, thanks very much, Op. I appreciate your time, and I also want to thank our producers, especially Mark Winter, for making this show possible. I encourage all of you to visit my Aquarium Mania blog on Pet Life Radio. Also, if you have any questions, comments, or ideas for a show, please email me at roy@petliferadio.com. If you're ever in Florida, please be sure to visit the Aquarium Mania exhibit at the Florida Aquarium in Tampa, another of my favorite places to see fish. Until next time, visit your local aquarium stores and keep your tanks clean and your fish healthy, and consider a collecting trip with Yop and Margarita Tours. We may put some more information online on the web for those of you that are interested. And so until next time, we'll see you then.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.